The new federal law brought them back in. They all had to re-register. There were about 4,500 of them, about a third of them, about 1,400 of them are still not registered, and these are not included in the statistics. However, if we included them and said they're all non-compliant, it would still be 18%, so it would still be a dramatic improvement. And I'm going to talk about just a little bit of why those, what's happening with those people in a few minutes. I just want to point out some of the things that happened in the General Assembly. They fixed what had happened in the 2000 court decision. I said that they'd come in and they said, well, the wording said moving into the county. Legislature came in and fixed that. They made the change that you didn't have to register while you were in prison. That freed up a whole lot of resources. They made changes to the amount of information that's available. Under the old system, it was only the name and address and the offenses. Now there's photos, known aliases, a physical description, a lot more information is available. They did pass some new legislation that would allow people to petition the court to be taken off of the registry if certain time limits and things are fulfilled, so that there is a way for someone to not be permanently on the registry. There's still resource issues, of course, in terms of how much money is spent on this, but the legislature did allow the counties to set up a fund where they can do law enforcement activities, and this would come under that. The registry is now on the internet. There's been system enhancements to the Department of Corrections and probation. So really there have been a lot of wonderful steps taken towards getting this problem under control. There are still some problems, though. SORNA, that I mentioned before, that came into law in 2006, had a date that you had to be in compliance with the federal laws that was going to be in 2009. The state of Missouri made its compliance packet, sent it in, along with a request for a one-year extension, just in case they didn't meet the requirements. They got the 1 year approved, but then the federal government, U.S. Attorney General's office, expanded that 1 year to everyone to make it happen in summer of 2010. In the meantime, our state has received back notice that we are not in substantial compliance. And so as of right now, with one additional extension, we have to be in compliance by this time next year, July of 2011, or we could risk losing our federal funds for this. So there are still some issues that have to be dealt with. Of course, the re-registration population, the 1,445 people, our suggestion to the Missouri Highway Patrol is that those people be listed again on the registry in some kind of special category. The reason that they weren't added back in is because it would unfairly inflate the compliance numbers on counties where these people used to live at the time they became exempt. But now you've had some time period since then. We don't know where they are. They're not necessarily in those counties, so it wouldn't help to have them on those counties' numbers. So what they're going to do, and they're supposed to be doing that any time now this fall, is to put those people in a separate category, which will do a couple of things. One, it will notify the population out there as a whole that these people are out there, even though we don't know where they are. So it does give some protections out there. Now, on the compliance with SORNA, the Highway Patrol and locals have done everything that they can now to become compliant. We now are down to just legislative changes. So the answer is we have to work with the legislature to make sure that the provisions that would enhance reporting and make it the same schedule as the federal schedule get passed through the legislature, and it needs to be done this session coming up. That was another reason why we needed to go ahead and finish up the audit and have it out there. We found a couple of things that could be done to help identify the noncompliant. We found that they are not doing data matches as a whole with Department of Labor on people who are working. So, for example, if they have one individual they want to check on, they can do it on a case-by-case basis. They can call over to the Department of Labor and say, do you have any labor stats on this person? Are they working? They are not set up to do any kind of batch matching. What we did was, batch match. We came in and we took the non-compliant offenders for the counties we were looking in, and we ran them through the quarterly wage reports. And you'll see that in those counties, there were 282 non-compliant offenders. We found 95 of them working. So if they work together with the Department of Labor to check on these, they could increase their compliance rate. And right now, on a county level, they don't have access to that information. So the county sheriff has to call the highway patrol, have the highway patrol make a call on a person. And it's just a cumbersome system. But there is a way to make it happen and increase the compliance even more. Just a few problems. We went out to the probation and parole offices, and they have all these new procedures put in place, but we found like 3 of the 8 offices we looked at weren't doing those. So it's a matter of just getting out there and making sure that they are complying with the new policies. The final issue that we found has to do with indigent sex offenders getting the treatment that is required. Right now, there's evaluation and treatment requirements in the law, but the law also specifies that the sex offenders have to pay for their own treatment. Obviously, there are a number of them out there who are not able to do so. So we took a look at it, and the estimated cost on a yearly basis is about $600,000 to provide the required treatment to the sex offenders who could not afford it. We looked at a couple of these offices to see the evaluation time period, and in the city of St. Louis, we found a couple of offices, the evaluations that were required are over a year behind because there isn't money to do any of this work. There is a fund set up, intervention funds. When we looked at the Department of Corrections, the Inmate Revolving Fund, as of 2010, it was about $16.5 million. It had been up as high as $25 million. And they do have plans to spend this money, but it is an allowable use to use it for treatment. $3 million of this money was given over to Department of Probation and Parole for inmate reentry services, and that would include sex offender treatment. But to date, the total amount actually spent on indigent sex offenders is $42,000, and that was only spent this last year, first time ever. So something needs to be done, some kind of evaluation needs to be made as to how we're going to take care of this group of individuals that are out there not getting the required treatment under the law. And those are the findings of our audit.